It is noon on YouTube, which means it's 5 o'clock somewhere. The happy hour bar is open. It is your pal, Matthew Berry, here serving up drinks. And I'm very excited about today's show. I often talk about the fact that ADP, if you go and look at my draft day manifesto on fantasylife.com, it's for free. I'm a company man. If you look at that, one of the big things I've said, and I've said this for years, is that ADP on any site that you draft on greatly influences how the draft goes. And so that the ADP that might be on ESPN, for example, is different than the ADP on Yahoo or CBS, Sleeper, wherever else you might play. GuillotineLeagues.com, for example, which is free, by the way. The app is awesome. No fees whatsoever this year. If you play in a paid league, everything you pay goes into the prize pool. I know a lot of other sites take a healthy cut off the top. No such deal at GuillotineLeagues.com. So please give it a try. And we have some cool announcements with GuillotineLeagues.com coming up very soon. It's the best way to play, by the way. But back to ESPN ADP, back to ADP in general, wherever you draft, that can be exploited. Because if you have different ranks than what the current ADP is, you're going to be able to arbitrage against that and get a lot of great value. And who better to discuss that with me today? We're going to exploit ESPN ADP. We're going to give you a bunch of players that are going way too low on ESPN that you can exploit. And who better to do that than Alex Cupps, who is the newest member of Fantasy Life, of our team at Fantasy Life. Alex came to our attention because my buddy and colleague at Fantasy Life, Peter Overzet, did a reality show this summer called So You Think You Can Tout, where I believe, I don't know the exact numbers in front of me, but I believe 8 billion people applied to be in this contest. And emerging from it all, the winner of So You Think You Can Tout Season 1, because I'm sure there'll be a sequel, is my friend Alex Cupps. Alex, welcome to the Happy Hour Show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Matthew. It's been a pleasure. I've been at Fantasy Life now for a couple weeks, and it's already been just some of the best weeks in my history of creating fantasy football content, albeit very short. But yeah, it's been great. Like you said, So You Think You Could Tout, hosted by Peter Overzet, just an awesome opportunity, really just served as a springboard for me to get involved in the fantasy football community, creating content. And I'm super stoked to join you for this topic specifically, considering one of the first tools I noticed at Fantasy Life once I became an employee over there was the awesome ADP comparison tool between the various platforms that you just talked about, CBS, Yahoo, ESPN. And being a data scientist and data being the main thing that drives me in fantasy football, I immediately was thinking, my brain was turning, how can we take all this data, compare it, drop the average across all platforms, compare it to individual platforms and find the biggest deltas, which players or values going on which platforms? And I think, like you said, ESPN is one that has some of the most value to find across the entire fantasy landscape in 2026. So I'm stoked to have that conversation with you and talk about some of our favorite players over on ESPN.
So we're going to get to that very soon, but let's get to know you a little bit. And we'll start with Exhausted Texas Fan, who says, Alex, what's the secret to your teeth?
The secret to my teeth.
People are blinded by your smile. as I think Pronto Joey just said, you know, too much hair for this podcast, which I think is fair. You absolutely have too much hair for this podcast. Candidly, and better teeth. You know what I mean? Like it's right.
Five years of braces will do it to you, man.
It worked out well because Raise the Flag says -110. That Barry says you have a nice head of lettuce. You do have a nice head of lettuce, Raise the Flags. But it's like you're in a prediction market there. nailing that one. So Alex, but you mentioned you're a data scientist. So let's real quickly before we dive into ESPN ADP, and we've got some news with some older running backs. but tell us a little bit, shortly, briefly here, but your background. Where are you from? You mentioned you're a data scientist. What science were you data-ing before becoming a member of Fantasy Life? So just talk to me a little bit about your background here.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm originally from the East Bay in California, about an hour outside of San Francisco. I live in Sacramento now, but I'm actually still a full-time software engineer and data scientist for my normal job. But what got me into fantasy football data science was actually I did my master's program in 2023 and finished up in 2025 writing my thesis on creating a predictive model to help me figure out which players are going to be the best NFL fantasy players at the NFL level based on how they were in college, their production metrics, their athleticism, all that advanced data. I've always just loved fantasy football and trying to get a competitive edge, like however I can, to take down my leagues. So figured I might as well, you know, do my thesis on it. And yeah, ever since last September when I started creating content, it's just been an absolute roller coaster and happy to be here.
Yeah, well, listen, you've done a great job. And again, you were the clear winner to me on So You Think You Can Tout. And we're thrilled to have you. Of course, everyone follow him at Cups Analytics. At Cups Analytics. And we're thrilled to have you at FantasyLife.com. So if you want Alex's rankings, you want his dynasty thoughts, you want his analysis, it's all available at FantasyLife.com. We're thrilled to have you, especially today. And you did write a couple of articles about exploiting ADP, including ESPN. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later today. But first off, we had some breaking news during the show yesterday, Alex, that Najee Harris, again, Undertaker gif, like, Undertaker gift, right? Najee Harris rising from the dead. He has been signed by the Giants to a one-year deal. Played just three games with the Chargers last season. You know, tore that Achilles in week three. Running backs coming back from Achilles are always tough, especially older running backs that have had as much work as Harris. But I guess, you know, when you blow a blitz pickup the way Tyrone Tracy did, any port in a storm. What are your thoughts here about Najee Harris joining the New York Giants? Not the San Francisco Giants. Come on, Barry.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting and it's tough for me because I've been drafting the absolute, you know what, out of Cameron Scataboo this season so far. He's one of my favorite running backs in the league based on what we saw him do in his rookie season. One of the things I do from a data approach to things is I generate year one and year two statistical comps for these players. And Scataboo, based on his prospect profile and what he did in his rookie season before he got hurt, he came out with some unbelievable comps for a fourth round running back. He's got guys like Kareem Hunt and Devon Achane all the way at the top of the list. So, you know, very rarely, not very rarely, but, you know, occasionally we'll see one of these fourth round running backs that really hits in a big way for fantasy football. And I've always felt like Scataboo is that guy going into year two. So seeing Najee Harris get added to this backfield, it definitely muddies things a little bit for me because I think the bet on Scataboo being that true workhorse in year two gets a little stickier here. I went back because I was curious. You know, we have that Greg Roman to Najee Harris connection from last year, like you mentioned on the Chargers. And I went back, I was curious what Greg Roman was thinking, like what his idea was bringing in Najee to be with, you know, the first round rookie Omarion Hampton. And there was a quote from last offseason saying that, from Greg Roman, saying that the day of one running back taking every rep, it's kind of gone the way of prehistoric creatures. So I think Greg Roman is safe to say he thinks that, you know, the bell cow running back, or at least he hopes that he can take his team in a way that's not using a bell cow running back, which is not what you want to hear for fantasy football. Obviously, last year, things were a little complicated in LA with obviously the Najee fireworks incident back in July and then quickly tears his Achilles. So I don't think it ever really went according to plan for what Greg Roman wanted in LA, but I'm a little worried that he tries to implement that in New York this year.
Yeah, I think that I don't think Najee Harris really has any standalone value. And, you know, there's, you know, they've still got Devin Singletary there as well, you know, in terms of, you know, older depth running backs. I think a slight knock to Scataboo. He's my running back 20. I knocked him a little bit here. I'm 46 overall. Look, I rank Tyrone Tracy because you have to at running back 44, but I just can't imagine drafting Tyrone Tracy. Like, you know, I think the Najee Harris signing hurts Tracy more because Tracy was always going to be behind Scataboo. And again, it's one clip that gets blown out of proportion, but, you know, they need Jackson Dart up healthy. And if they've got zero trust in Tyrone Tracy in pass pro, when he's the passing down back, right? Again, you can use Najee Harris on third down. You can use Devin Singletary on third down. Honestly, you can use Cam Scataboo on third down. He caught a lot of passes at Arizona State. So honestly, I just, It'd be tough for me in a redraft league to draft Tyrone Tracy, except unless it was a very deep league. I don't think you have standalone value, as I said, for Harris or Singletary, but it does. I think you will see those guys. I think you'll see Harris, you know, maybe he vultures a goal line carry here or there, and it does hurt Scadaboo just a little bit. Speaking of older running backs, Alex, Alvin Kamara has an MCL sprain. He's going to miss at least 1 month. And so, you know, look, the obvious answer here is that this helps Travis Etienne in terms of just more touches. I moved Etienne up a few spots. He's now my running back 16. I'm at 39 overall. Moved Alvin Kamara down to running back 50. Like, he wasn't super efficient last year, sort of kind of hit a wall as it was. You bring in Travis Etienne, and the fact that now he's going to miss at least a month and maybe more for an older running back that had an uncertain role. I guess, you know, there's not much that we can talk about here, but let's use this as an excuse to talk a little bit about Travis Etienne. I think that in the absence of Kamara, it'll be some sort of a committee between Devin Neal and Kendre Miller to spell Travis Etienne, but it just might mean Etienne just gets a little bit more work. Honestly, I don't know that there's another, that there's a number two pass catching running back on the Saints that you feel good about. And, you know, you add Kamara to Jordan Tyson's injury and all of a sudden it's Olave and Juwan Johnson. Travis Achiu. Thanks, Martin's World. Like, Etienne? I mean, it's so weird because his brother on Carolina, I believe, is still Etienne.
He is.
So, yeah. Right. So, Travis Etienne, I don't know. I apologize. Anyway, but let's talk about Travis here and your thoughts on him in the Saints offense. Over 1,300 yards from scrimmage through the past 4 years for Etienne, who quietly has been very productive since he's come to the league.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think him getting signed by the Saints, they definitely wanted to fill the role of their, you know, number one running back. They see Alvin Kamara getting older every year, clearly losing some juice, especially in the run game. And, you know, Kamara's big calling card his entire career has obviously been the receiving ability. I think this definitely does benefit Etienne. Like you said, you moved him up to RB16. I did as well. He was previously my RB20. Now he's my RB16. Moved him up four spots, which might not seem like that much in the grand scheme of things. But for me, that was actually a jump like in two rounds of value into like that next tier of running backs towards the top of the draft. So I'm definitely bullish on what this means for the outlook for Etienne in New Orleans this season, just because I think it opens up more of a lane for him to be involved in the receiving game than it did with Kamara. You know, Kamara being that veteran that's gonna, you know, he's gonna get his veteran touches just out of goodwill from the Saints, and he was always gonna be involved on those long down and distance snaps, on the third downs, in the receiving game. So I think with Etienne, you mentioned Kendre Miller and the other one, Devin Neal, the two guys behind Kamara and Etienne in the depth chart, neither of them really have a pass catching skill set from their prospect profiles. So what you're seeing is, I think now Etienne, not only is he the 1A in this backfield, he's also just the most talented receiving back with Kamara hurt. So I think that opens up the three down skill set, the dual threat skill set for Etienne to really hit a big ceiling as long as Kamara's sidelined.
Yeah, Stuntman Chuck saying his brother is Etienne, and I'm still drinking. So, well done, Stuntman Chuck. Always bringing the fire there. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And again, just without Jordan Tyson, I think just it's a fairly narrow target tree, right? I mean, it's literally going to be Olave, Juwan Johnson, and Travis Etienne. All due respect to the Devon Veles of the world. I think, you know, it's basically those three guys going to be the main part of the offense for at least the first month for the Saints. Yeah. And possibly longer, because the Kamara and Tyson injuries could easily last longer than a month. So let's move on now, Alex. You wrote an article on fantasylife.com for free where you talked about exploiting ESPN ADPs, right? And that, I think one thing that we should sort of talk about here is that I think this is important. What the default league on ESPN is a 10-team standard league, two wide receivers, two quarterbacks, full point PPR, right? One point PPR. One quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, tight end, one flex, a kicker, and a defense. So that means when the team at ESPN is creating their top 200, they have to include kickers and defenses because you can't leave the draft without them. Okay. So, like, I think, and I'm going to ask producer Damian here in the back to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe, like, the default on Yahoo, for example, are 12-team half-point PPR leagues. All right. So, again, it just to give you an example of, like, you know, in terms of, I think that's important because when the people that are doing the rankings and the projections for those two particular sites, and I don't know actually what the default is on some of the others, but that's the, like, just those two differences sort of tells you, right, in terms of how you draft in a 10-team full PPR league is different than how you might draft in a 12-team half-point PPR league. Especially because, you know, the depth is so much greater in a 10-teamer. So maybe you take more chances. You might go with more of an injured player, right? So Brian Hickman saying the math is strong in today's show. You know, it's only from Alex, guys. It's, you know, here's my math. The math that I know is one margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot. shout out to that song, the country song. And, of course, Jimmy Buffett. Luke Bryan. I think Luke Bryan sings that song. All right. So anyway, you looked at ESPN ADP, and then I compared my rankings to ESPN ADP, and we came up with a bunch of guys where you and I both agree. What is ESPN smoking here?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, but the truth is, or ESPN users, I should say. But again, I rank, our default ranks on fantasylife.com are for half-point PPR. Right. And we rank with the idea that these are ranks that can be used across multiple things. It's a plug for Fantasy Life Plus. But if you get Fantasy Life Plus and you can use promo code Barry for 10% off. But at ESPN, at fantasylife.com, if you have a Fantasy Life Plus subscription, what you can do is you can say, like, I'm in a super flex league. I'm in a four flex league. I'm in a half point PPR. I'm in tight end premium. Whatever your scoring system is, our ranks will then, you enter your scoring system, and then our ranks are specifically designed exactly for your league. This ADP, again, is purely for 10-team, one quarterback, a full PPR league with only two wide receivers. Even if you play in a different style on ESPN, you're in a 12-team, three wide receiver league, understand that the ADP is for 10-team, one quarterback, two wide receiver leagues. So to me, I'm going to start here. I have Caleb Williams at QB7. Cups, so do you. We both have Caleb Williams at QB7. You're actually higher on him in the overall. You have him at 65, I'm at 73. But both of us are massively ahead of him on ESPN. He's going 93rd overall. You and I both have him in the top 73. So you and I each have him at least 20 spots ahead of where he's going on ESPN in the overall. And he's QB11 on ESPN. You and I both have Caleb Williams as a top 7 pick. He's being drafted after Matthew Stafford, Bo Nix, and Jackson Dart.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of the things that caught me so off guard too when I first saw this one. And I went and looked, you know, what's the difference in terms of who are the guys going between QB7 and QB11? A guy like Matthew Stafford there, it kind of blew my mind, you know, because that rank is just so different than you'll find on any other platform right now. And I think one thing that you just mentioned that I think was a really good thing to highlight is the fact that with this ADP being defaulted to 10 team, you know, two wide receiver, just a very run of the mill format, you want to chase upside, right? Because like you said, the depth is always going to be there. In a shallow league like that, you're always going to have guys on the waiver wire that you can pick up and start on a weekly basis. If you're shooting for upside, in what world are you going to take Matthew Stafford over Caleb Williams, who's going into year three with Ben Johnson at the helm? He showed major improvement in year two. Touchdown rate bumped up from 3.6 to 4.9% in year two. Yards per attempt up from 6.3 to 6.9. And probably the most important thing that we saw Caleb Williams improve on in year two was reducing that sack rate, reducing those catastrophic losses that we saw him have in year one. In year two, that sack rate dropped from 10.8%, which was one of the league worst in 2024, down to 4.1, which is one of the top eight best among quarterbacks. So, I mean, everything's trending upwards for this Ben Johnson offense and Caleb Williams. You have Ben Johnson on record saying he wants to be the highest scoring offense in the history of the NFL, which, you know, when someone like Ben Johnson says that, I'm going to listen. Most of the other, you know, coaches in the league, I'll probably just chalk that up to normal coach speak. But Ben Johnson, you know, I definitely trust listening to what he wants to do. And when he says something like that, my ears perk up around Caleb Williams. And especially if you're getting him at QB 11, I mean, it's a great upside swing over on ESPN right now.
Stanley C. Bynes says, because Stafford doesn't run. Yeah, that's the thing that's crazy. And that's one of the things I think that's so important about Caleb Williams is that I don't know if he gets enough credit for his rushing. Again, last year, he was one of only two quarterbacks to rank top seven in the NFL in both passing and rushing yards. Drake May being the other one, right? Each of the past two seasons, he's had at least 3,500 passing yards, at least 350 rushing yards. He's one of only four quarterbacks in the NFL that can say that. And so, and I think you bring up a really interesting point, Cups, which is that if you're swinging for upside, which is and especially in ESPN, where again, in a 10-team, one quarterback league, why wouldn't you swing for upside? Because in a world like that, if Caleb Williams doesn't work out, well, there's going to be like six or seven very usable guys on the waiver wire any given week. So you always want to swing for upside. But you mentioned the one thing I do want to say here is that, yes, he's going as QB 11 on ESPN. I don't know that you need to wait for QB 11, even though you and I have him at QB 7. But, you know, you think about the overall, right? Again, I'm at 73 overall. You have him 65 overall. So we think he's like a sixth or seventh rounder. He's going in like, you know, basically the 10th round on ESPN. So if we have him as a sixth or seventh rounder, draft him in the eighth, you know, maybe early in the ninth. Again, just because we're exploiting ADP doesn't mean anyone else isn't as well. DM Gazoo says, will Caleb throw for 4K this year? I think so. Again, just second year of Luther Burden. I know he's a little banged up, but, you know, second year of Colson Levin, second year of the offense overall. To your point, getting the sacks are down, more pocket awareness. It's a really good offense, good offensive line. No Manungai as well, so maybe they throw a little bit more earlier in the season. So we're all in on Caleb Williams. We think he's massively mispriced on ESPN. Another guy that you and I both think is mispriced on ESPN is Chase Brown. You're at running back 8, I'm at running back 9. He's going as running back 13. And you know, I both have him about a round ahead of the overall. I'm at 15 overall, you're at 16 overall. He's currently going at 26 overall on ESPN. Just massive utilization for an offense that we think is going to explode this year.
Yeah, yeah. This one really confuses me because I'm not sure what people are seeing that's changed from 2025 when it comes to the Bengals. It's the exact same backfield. In fact, it's maybe even arguably an easier backfield for Chase Brown to compete with, considering Zach Moss is now gone. It's strictly 30-year-old Samaje Perine and late-round rookie from 2025 Taj Brooks, who hasn't done anything. So the competition is just simply not there for Chase Brown. He finished as the RB7 in points per game last season, but he had a top five usage, like you mentioned, among running backs last year, only behind Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, Christian McCaffrey, and Jonathan Taylor. And all four of those guys are going in the first round. So the usage is there for Chase Brown. He's on what's projecting to be one of the best offenses in the entire league this year. And considering you're getting him on ESPN and in the third round, that feels unbelievable to me. So like you said, I mean, there's probably going to be other people in your league that are sharp enough to exploit this ADP to know the values. So, you know, you don't have to really push it, in my opinion, to 26.2 overall to RB13 on ESPN. Just snag him in the late second. Like if you could pair up a Bijan or a Jahmyr Gibbs with Chase Brown at the top of your draft through two rounds, that sounds like probably one of the best starts you could have across the entire landscape this year.
I prefer to go running back heavy early on if I can, just because I feel like the position gets, the wide receiver room is deeper than the running back position as you get later into the draft. But since week 9 of 2024, he is the sixth best running back in fantasy on a points per game basis. SEC Man says Chase Brown goes early in every draft I've done so far. Well, you're probably not on ESPN with the general public. But the SEC Man, it's important to know your league, but we're just saying like it will, I bet you Chase Brown goes later on ESPN than he does go on other sites. I think you know, tough start to the season for Chase Brown last year, as people that watch this show know, because I was complaining as the whole thing. Pronto Joey, of course, mentioning that Chase Brown, baddest man in the whole damn town. Sorry, Pronto Joey, I screwed up your joke. But, you know, bad Chase Brown, baddest man in the whole damn town. He is the Brown Gobbler, as the show knows. I think it's a bet on also just the Chiefs the Bengals offense. I got to get back to the Pinot here. I'm all over the place. But anyway, you and I both have Chase Brown as an RB1, and I will tell you that Chase Brown is on the short list for ride or die. Tomorrow, Alex Cupps, tomorrow is ride or die day. I just want everyone to know, tomorrow, Thursday morning, ride or die. The article will be up on fantasylife.com, and of course we'll do it here. Tomorrow's show will be the ride or die show for Fantasy Football Happy Hour. We announced it today.
Wow.
Chase Brown is on the short list. Wolf John saying, take another shot of Pinot, that helps clear the throat. I really do. It's never too early to drink for me, clearly.
Yeah, ride or die day, best day of the year. I'm looking forward to that. I will be tuned in.
Do you have a pick for me? Do you have a suggestion, Alex Cupps? This is for the regulars. I want you to do a quick video, like 20 seconds. Don't go crazy. But I want you to pitch me your ride or die candidates.
My ride or die?
Right. Just, you know, take a phone out and just be like, Matthew, I think it should be Chase Brown because of this and because of this. Two sentences, and send it to me. And we're going to play some tomorrow on the air before we reveal the answer here. So I would love to hear, because I haven't actually decided. I've got a short list. Chase Brown's one of them. But who would be your pick for my ride or die?
Oh, my pick. If anyone in here listens to my content, they'll know it's Ashton Jeanty for me at the end of the
really?
First
okay.
is my ride or die. Yes, absolutely. And I will gladly send you a little pitch as to why that should be your guy in
Perfect.
2026.
All right. So we'll hold on to that. But I want to talk about another running back, and that's Bashaul Tuten. You know, you and I both have him, actually. We both have him at running back 23. He's going as running back 25 on ESPN, so not that much of a difference. But where the biggest difference here is in the overall. I have him at 55. You have him at 59. So we both have him in the mid-50s. He's going as pick 80 on ESPN. Again, 55 for me, 55 for you, 59 for you, 80 on ESPN. This is a Jacksonville backfield, Cupps, that averaged over 21 fantasy points per game last season and at least 13 fantasy points in two of the three games that Bashaul Tuten has had where he's gotten double the touches. Obviously, we talked about it. Travis Achane or whatever is in New Orleans. And so, you know, it's Bashaul Tuten and Chris Rodriguez, who has only 6 receptions in 35 career games. So one of the better passing offenses in the NFL, Bashaul Tuten should be the passing down back. I'm sure we'll see some Lakeem Allen. But, you and I both think Bashaul Tuten is a value compared to where he's going in the overall on ESPN.
Yeah, he's definitely a value. This one's a little more interesting for me because the first few guys we've talked about, I'm taking really big stance on this season.
Yep.
Bashaul Tuten, I am a little more wary about. You know, we're, like you mentioned, we're not super far off when it comes to the ranking at the RB position specifically, 23 versus 25 on ESPN. But yeah, what makes Tuten interesting for me is I was never a super big fan of his prospect, and some of the big concerns I had coming out, or what I had about him coming out as a prospect in 2025, all revolved around his receiving production and his receiving profile in college. And I was disappointed, to say the least, with what we saw in year one on that front specifically, because as you and I both know, you need receiving production to be like a league-breaking fantasy running back. And for Bashaul Tuten, he averaged 0.7 receptions per game. This was towards the bottom of many running backs in the league. And it kind of really hurt his year two comps in my model. The guys that it compares him to, based on those prospect profiles and the production in those rookie seasons, it showed that he has one of the wider range of outcomes of any running back this year. You have guys that he compares to, like, at the very high end, you have guys like James Cook and Kyren Williams. But then you have a whole slew of guys that never prove to be like fantasy relevant to any extent. So it's quite the range for Tuten. And I think the big question that everything hinges on for him is, can he consolidate enough of this backfield to make himself fantasy relevant. And I think there's a little bit of a concern this year of him getting squeezed from both ends, whether that's Chris Rodriguez in the goal line work, in the red zone work, potentially vulturing some of those touchdowns, and the aforementioned LaQuint Allen that you said, you know, might come in for some receiving work as well. If LaQuint Allen's getting all of the long down and distance snaps, and we also see Chris Rodriguez taking rushing work and potentially valuable rushing work in the red zone, I think we could potentially be looking at something kind of reminiscent of what we saw last year in Tampa Bay towards the end of the season with Bucky Irving getting vultured in the receiving game by Rashad White, in the red zone by Sean Tucker. I think there's a chance that's what we see out of Bashaun Tutin. So it does make me a little sick to my stomach taking him in that 40 to 50 range in drafts right now. But like I said, the ceiling is there. If he can consolidate the backfield in one of the best offenses in the league projected in 2026 with Jaguars, then the ceiling's the roof for a guy like this. But I just think we have to recognize how wide this range of outcomes could possibly be.
Dave M says, 411 says, the new nickname, the Toothler. Look at those like pearly whites. I got that, Cups. You're the Toothler now. Look, I get it. Although, you know, we're supposed to be talking these guys up and you're talking them down. The fact is you and I both have him as a sixth rounder. He's going as like a basically an eighth rounder on ESPN. Somebody, I think Jay Woogie asked if he's a solid RB2. No, we don't think he's a solid RB2. You and I both have him ranked as a high-end flex, but There is upside to Tutin. There's some downside, which is why we have him just as a flex. But certainly in the overall, in terms of the potential range of outcomes, because of the upside, we think he's going too low on ESPN. All right, Toothler, we don't have a ton of time left, so I want to go a little bit quicker on the remaining guys, make sure we get to some more here. So we'll try to be a little more concise, both of us, in our analysis. But Blake Corum is somebody that should be going a lot higher. I'm at 93. You have him at 86, so you like him even more than I do. But he's going at pick 140 on ESPN. Again, 86, 93, 140. So like five rounds after we have him here. You have him at 32. I'm at 34. He's going as running back 39. So I don't understand this one, just because to me, Blake Corum is like the perfect kind of guy to get in that range. He's a usable flex, certainly during bye weeks, right? This is a guy who week nine on averaged 55 rushing yards a game. And in a world, and we think he'll get, you know, 8 to 10 touches a game because we think the Rams will be leaning a lot and running a lot in the second half. And obviously, then there is legitimately league-winning upside if something were to happen to Kyren Williams.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you summed it up very well, that he's kind of the best of both worlds, where you can plug him in potentially to your RB2 spot if you faded RB early and maybe attacked the wide receiver running back or the wide receiver quarterback tight end positions earlier in your draft. Need an RB2 that you can just plug in and not have to really worry about it. Blake Corum is that guy for you because he's going to project relatively well, even with Kyren healthy. And then you also get that league winning upside if Kyren does go down. So a little bit of both worlds there with Blake Corum in 2026. And I think people are also underrating how much Corum ate into Kyren Williams' workload down the stretch last year. Corum didn't pass 10 carries in any game through the first 6 weeks, but then did it in 7 of the last 11 going down the stretch of the season. So he's definitely getting more involved in year two in 2025. And I think Sean McVay has high hopes for what Corum can bring to this offense in 2026 in his third season.
No question about that. Somebody that we also have high expectations for this season. How about Zay Flowers, the Zayler? I'm working on that one. But the Zayler, you and I both have... The big difference here is in the overall. I'm at 15, you have him at 14. He's going as wide receiver 17. Okay, fine. But you have him at 28 in the overall. I'm at 32 in the overall. He's going at 42 on ESPN. So he's going a full round or a round and a half beyond where you have him, a round after I do. You know, again, I'm probably a slightly lower on him just because I'm nervous about the touchdown upside. You know, right. It's just hard to see him being a big touchdown scorer, even if he gets a little luckier. But so, you know, this is a guy who last year had a 29% target share, and I think that number gets higher this year. When you look at, you know, Isaiah likely going, like, I know there's Jacoby Lane buzz and Rashad Bateman's back, but honestly, like, Zay Flowers is going to be the lead wide receiver with not a lot of competition. Exhausted Texas Fencing League, the nickname Sauceberry. Yeah, fair enough, guys. It's on you guys. You guys can do it. But you know what I mean? Like, there's just not a lot of target competition. You know, right. He's the only player on the Ravens who had at least an 18% target share last season. Neck Brace Nation saying, Zay, it isn't so. Not bad. Not bad. Cups, we think this is going to potentially a breakout year for Zay Flowers.
Yeah, I mean, Zay Flowers is interesting every year to me because I don't think there's really any question in how talented he is at the wide receiver position. And in a year last season where the Ravens were 27th in total passing yards per game, Zay quietly put up the sixth most receiving yards among all wide receivers. So he clearly is a target hog. He's a volume hog. He creates after the catch as well. The big question is what you said, Matthew, about the touchdown upside. And from a data scientist background, touchdowns statistically prove to be one of the less sticky things on a year-over-year basis when it comes to pass catchers. But there is something to be said about, Zay isn't the biggest body receiver. He's not going to be the one that's going up for jump balls in the end zone. So there definitely is something there about maybe he just doesn't have the profile to be a guy that can be a massive touchdown earner on a, you know, on a yearly basis. But I think that doesn't take out the fact that we could see a spike year from him in 2026, you know, in terms of just him having some positive regression on the touchdown end. You know, sixth most receiving yards in the league last year. And like you said, the target competition this season, two rookies, Jacoby Lane and Elijah Surratt, but we see Isaiah likely leave. He's setting up well to be the number one for Lamar again, and potentially a big bounce back year for the Ravens as a whole.
For sure. The touchdown question is just, again, they like Andrews, and I think they'll like Jacoby Lane in the end zone. Yeah. Of course, they're getting close. They've got the big dog in King Henry. Hey, another wide receiver that we think could have a breakout year is Luther Burden. Now, again, the injuries hurt this a little bit, but still, you and I are both there. You have at 21. I'm at 22. We both have him in the 40s here overall. 41 overall, 43 overall for me. He's going 77 overall on ESPN. He's three rounds behind us in the overall on ESPN, even with the slight injury. And right now the expectation is to be back for week one. But even if he misses week one, I mean, just, you know, we saw it down the stretch, right? You know, second highest yards after the catch per reception among qualified wide receivers. Three games that he saw at least a 20% target share. He averaged 96 yards. Top five in both yards per target and yards per route run among wide receivers that had at least 50 targets. No DJ Moore. I just, no Kyle Manung guy. So again, you know, like I have Burden ahead of Roma Dunze. I think Burden's going to have a monster season.
Yeah, agreed. I also have Burden ahead of Rome. And yeah, this one sticks out to me as one of like my favorites. If I had multiple leagues on ESPN, I would have 100% of Luther Burden at this price. Just because, like we mentioned at the top of the show, you want to shoot for upside in a shallow league like these formats are done on ESPN by default. And this is probably one of the highest upside wide receiver swings that you can take. Like you mentioned, all the per route numbers from last year were bonkers. I think people that might be a little more, you know, casual into fantasy football might see that he had roughly 8 fantasy points per game last year, which ranked, you know, wide receiver 50 or so. On the surface, it doesn't look like anything that special, right? But when you dive into the advanced analytics, you look at how many fantasy points per route run he was only behind two wide receivers in the league, being JSN and Puka Nacua. So wide receiver in the league on a route run basis when it came to producing fantasy points. So that's a profile that if you can get that in the 70s on ESPN, I mean, I'm going to have 100% exposure to Luther Burden in my ESPN drafts.
Yeah, by the way, late 70s, he's going 77. He's going in the 8th round, which is way too late for Luther Burden. Stuntman Chuck says, if you like Luther Burden, that makes you a Lutheran. Absolutely. I am a Lutheran. We're all Lutherans here. We are at the church of Luther Burden. So from young wide receivers, young, exciting wide receivers like Luther Burden or Zay Flowers, let's go to somebody who's a little bit older in Chris Godwin. But again, as we sit here and look, no Mike Evans. Emeka Buka's already banged up. Jalen McMillan, serious injury last year. We'll see what you get out of him. Ted Hurst is a rookie. So on what we think will be one of the better offenses in the NFL, Chris Godwin, I'm at 33. You have him at 35. He's going as 53. Wide receiver 53. I mean, almost 20 spots after. He's going exactly 20 spots after I have him. And the overall is even crazier. So you have him at 76. I'm at 69. And on ESPN, he's going at 148. This is Chris Godwin. 76 for you, 69 for me, and 148 for ESPN. Last 3 years with Mike Evans off the field, Chris Godwin targeted on 25% of his routes. This rank is very surprising to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're, I know he had a tough year last year, but they paid him for a reason off of the injury. Second year removed from the injury, Godwin should be much more efficient, especially this year where he's going to get to play more in the slot.
Yeah, this, I thought Luther Burden was my favorite on this whole list, but it's Chris Godwin. I mean, this is just the cheapest, throw this guy in your flex and forget about it, that you could ever possibly imagine, going off the board nearly at 150 overall. And he's a guy that could hit your starting lineup in week one. So that for me is just craziness. I mean, like you said, no Mike Evans. Emeka Egbuka, a prospect we really liked, but did have a little bit of a shaky finish down the stretch. Started really hot, but sort of petered out towards the end. So I don't think it's crazy to say that there is a world out there where Godwin just serves as the wide receiver one for Baker in Tampa Bay in 2026.
Since Baker Mayfield became the starter in Tampa Bay, Buccaneers are sixth in slot targets. And again, the expectation here is that Godwin will play primarily in the slot this year with Emeka Buka on one side and either Jalen McMillan or Ted Hurst on the outside when they go to three wide receiver sets. Okay, let's go back to a young rookie now. And DeJuan Stribling has just, he's risen up the ranks in the ADP. Like, I've seen this on Yahoo and certainly other places. His ADP continues to rise, but he's just, on ESPN, they just haven't caught up to him. I'm at wide receiver 53. You're at wide receiver 47. So you're higher on him than I am, but we both have him right there. You're at 112 overall. I'm at 169. Okay, yep. Fine. On ESPN, he's going as wide receiver 68. So he's going 17 spots after me. He's going 21 spots after you have him. And more importantly, he's going at 169, which means he's not even being drafted in some leagues. You know, so he's basically going like in the 17th round, the 16th or 17th round on ESPN. Again, I have him, you and I both have him as kind of a 12th. You have him an 11th rounder, I have him as a 12th rounder, but we both like the upside of DeJuan Stribling, who played in the snap, let's talk about slot, I should say, played in the slot 60% of his snaps the other day.
Yeah. Stribling is very interesting to me. And I think this ADP on ESPN probably won't hold. I think it might just be a little slower to react than the other platforms. So I would expect to see him rise. But I mean, even where we have him, like wide receiver 47, you have a wide receiver 53. I could move him higher than this, depending on how the remainder of the offseason goes. I mean, Stribling being the 33rd overall pick, there was, you know, a lot of clamor online about how this is the worst pick in the 2026 draft and how Kyle Shanahan doesn't know how to draft wide receivers. You know, so many accusations were being thrown out for the 49ers after taking Stribling 33rd overall. But, you know, while I can say that from the data side, I'm not a massive fan of his production profile back at Ole Miss, I will say the 33rd overall draft capital gives him pretty much a guaranteed role, even if you just put aside all the injuries that we've seen to, you know, Mike Evans being banged up, Ricky Pearsall out for the season, Kittle coming back from an Achilles injury, even if everyone was healthy, the data tells me that Stribling has pretty much a runway out there to a role this season just for being the 33rd overall pick. At least that's what the historical comps have for him. And when I generated Stribling's rookie comps, I see a couple other interesting guys you might remember, 49ers fans. We had Dante Pettis come out as one. Deebo Samuel as well comes out as one of Stribling's rookie comps. Brandon Ayuk. So we see three former 49ers wide receivers, I guess, with Deebo, now a current wide receiver for the 49ers again. But three of these other wide receivers come out for Stribling's closest comp. So it's no secret to say that Shanahan definitely saw something in Stribling. And I could absolutely see him being a smash where he's going this year, particularly given what we've seen from the other wide receivers in this wide receiver core for Santa Clara. All these guys are hurt, right? And we know Mike Evans can get hurt at any given moment. He's already leaving practice yesterday.
Christian McCaffrey's banged up. Yeah. You forgot Christian Kirk. He's on the team. No Juwan Jennings on the team. As you mentioned, Ricky Pierce all out for the year. So there's certainly a scenario where just, you know, by being on the field in a Kyle Shanahan offense, who, by the way, since under Kyle Shanahan, San Francisco's second in the NFL in yards after the catch per reception, of course, Stribling very good after the catch as well. So I think he's a good fit. Stribling, of course, young, hasn't been as exposed to the substation nearly as much as others, as Jay Woogie makes a similar joke. So, I have it wide receiver 53. My suspicion is that when my final ranks are turned in, like, he'll be higher than that. Absolutely. All right, we got time for one more guy here, Alex. So Tucker Kraft, I think, you know, currently going as pick 100 and tight end 9 on ESPN. So they got him as an 11th rounder. He's barely a top 10 tight end. I'm a tight end 5. You have him a tight end 6. I'm at 74 overall. You have him at 79 overall. We both have him as a top 80 player, and he's not a top 100 player on ESPN. This all comes down to health, but so far it looks like he's healthy and he'll be there to start the season for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, so I think in a vacuum, I wouldn't even say that I'm the biggest fan of Tucker Kraft. He's definitely a target for me on ESPN where he's going at pick 100. But when it comes to, you know, the type of profile that Kraft succeeds with is predicated on him being super efficient, right? He needs to be a guy that's effective in creating yards after the catch on a relatively low target share, right? That's what we saw last year. He was tight end 1 before he got hurt. He was tight end 1 in points per game, but he was tight end 11 in expected fantasy points per game. So a big difference there, right, in terms of his role versus what he was actually able to produce given his efficiency. So I guess the question would be, does Tucker Kraft, or does he have the ability to maintain that efficiency coming off of a severe knee injury where, he's going to be healthy in 2026, but is he going to be healthy enough to be one of the most efficient tight ends in the entire NFL at creating yards for himself? So that would be my big question. But when you're getting him at tight end 9, past pick 100 on ESPN, all those questions go out the window for me. Now you're getting one of the higher upsides tight ends outside of the top 8. It's just a free upside swing right now.
Again, I am as a top 5 tight end. I understand your metrics, but, you know, I do think yards after the catch is a big part of his game. He's as good as a tight end at that, I think, in the NFL. And, you know, last year he completed 7 games. He had over 20% target share. No Dontavian Wicks, no Romeo Doubs. So less target competition for Tucker Kraft, who's not going to come off the field. He's, you know, their main tight end. And so, you know, since 2023, Tucker Kraft averages 2.3 fantasy points per target for his career.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Only George Kittle is better since 2023. So, yeah, I'm in on Tucker Kraft at price. I just think he's got a chance at being probably not the number, you know, probably not a top 3 tight end, but he could, if everything goes right, you could see him being right there in that tier with Bowers, McBride, and Loveland. And he could leapfrog like a Tyler Warren. Like, if somebody drafted him over Tyler Warren, I wouldn't look at them weird. I have Warren at 4. I have Tucker Kraft at 5, the Tuckler, the Tuck Daddy. But if somebody took him 4, I'm not being like, well, what are you doing, dude? That makes no sense.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, I talk a lot about the efficiency that he needs to have to be like a top end tight end. I think you said you don't think he could be top 3. I think he could if he's truly fully healthy and he has that efficiency on lock, then he definitely could end up top 3 for me. But even say he's not perfectly healthy, right? But he's still out there. The floor is just so unbelievably safe with Tucker Kraft because you're getting the number 1 tight end in one of the best offenses in the league. He has the red zone. He's a threat in the red zone as well to score multiple touchdowns in any given week. So even like if he's not 100% healthy, I could see him still turning in like at worst, you know, you're maybe getting like the tight end 10. So you're really drafting him at his floor, I feel like, on ESPN right now.
That's 100% correct. All right. And again, it's a potentially elite tight end that won't cost you elite tight end prices. Again, you can read the whole article on fantasylife.com, exploiting ESPN ADP. I think you also have an exploit in Yahoo ADP article,
correct,
right,
yeah.
Alex?
Yahoo and Sleeper as well, all three of the big platforms.
Okay, great. Well, then people should check all those out. They're all for free on fantasylife.com. Everyone should follow you on X, at Cups Analytics. Congratulations, Alex. Thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate the regulars for welcoming you here as well. I'm excited to see your ride or die video as to who it should be. Ashton Jeanty is a one I have not heard in a while. But again, ride or die day is tomorrow as well. Alex, anything else you want to plug here, brother?
No, thank you so much. Yeah, just Cups Analytics on Twitter, or X, that is. Cups Analytics on YouTube as well. I had a really interesting conversation with JJ Zacharyson, another guy that I really like in this space, yesterday. Go check out that video. New video is going to be coming all offseason as well, along with new articles on Fantasy Life. So thank you so much again for having me, Mr. Barry. It was a pleasure.
When you say Mr. Barry with that full head of lettuce and those pearly whites, it makes me feel really old and candidly ugly. So I don't like it. So congratulations on your one and only appearance on Fantasy Football Happy Hour.
Oh, no.
Raise the Flag says, okay, if you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be and why? We only have 45 seconds, so go quickly.
Oh, man, if I was an animal, I'd probably want to be a bird of sorts, maybe like a red-tailed hawk, I think would be fun. Just really booming screech, you know, and also being able to fly everywhere. I think that's probably one of the top ones for me. What about you?
Fair. If I am an animal, what do you mean? I think I'd want to be a lion, because, you know, lions, if you ever watch an actual male lion, they just sit there while the woman goes and does all the work, and they just sleep all day, and it's awesome. But
it's
you're a
life.
Big lion. Anyway, listen, it's closing time, which means you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Ride or die day is tomorrow. Check it out, fantasylife.com, and this show at noon Eastern. For Alex Cups, I am Matthew Berry. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace out.